I'm with John Sadler, and I'm in Ottawa at his home, and I'm going to ask him about his work. And John, you're doing some very exciting work now, and it's different from what I've seen before. Tell me about the work you're doing now, and what is, does it have a series name, or?
No, this started with the Vancouver show. It did orientate itself to the fact that I was going to show it in Vancouver. But as I say, I brought it back and started to develop it more, and it's unfolding on a, as it goes along. And it's not really what I want to do, have in mind what I'm where I want to develop to in future paintings, but it's one series that I thought was worth working up.
What is its name? The series name?
Well, in Vancouver, I had it Environmental Paintings.
And why? Why is that title?
Well, I'm very close to materials, natural materials, stone. I sculpt in stone. And I love old wood. It has a nostalgia and spirit and spirituality of usage. And to handle this, I picked my material out this way. I'm attracted by it, and I like to bring it home and place it into paintings in different contexts, and because I feel this is something that there's a beauty in it, like old painted wood, old colors that faded through weather, that I think we are missing these days, so I feel that it's very important to gain the spirituality of things back in our place. Although, so I'm hoping to develop this, and also I'm in love with texture. I want to develop in a minimal way of just pure textural paintings of the tar and the wax and the materials I use.
Talk a little bit about the two works that are lying here in your studio.
One is more formal than the other. There's a marble slab in one that I could have placed it in a where it had a figurative reference. Or a kind of a mountain landscape. And so I put it in the board of the canvas, the picture plane. And it's an interplay of using this material and taking it out of its context and in relationship and harmony or interplay with the other materials, the tar, the wax. I find the tar very physical. Using a tar, it kind of wills me to action, or it motivates me to my will to perform, because it gives it resistance. It's physical, it's pure, and in color and texture. And the wax is more of a, I look upon as this sensitivity, the quotation of a sensitivity. It takes, when you pour the wax on liquid, it takes the form of its ground, and I feel that's part of sensitivity. And it's transparent, or you can get it fairly opaque, white opaque, but it has a nice whiteness too. And then I started to develop the encaustic painting, and I like that too. When you're painting in an encaustic way, when you put down a mark, you're really making a mark. If you're putting down on oils or developing an oil painting with just pure oil painting, I feel that I'm shoving painting around, the paint around. But with the encaustic, I feel when I put down a stroke of the wax color, it's there. It's almost like in watercolor. If you make a stroke on your page, although it can be modified and developed, it's there and exists in its own right. So I'm really thrilled and happy working that way. I feel that it gives a responsibility. You have to, even just the handling of it, dipping your brush into the jar, and since you don't want it to drip, you hold it a minute, and in that moment, you think where you're going to put it, how you're going to put it, and therefore, it's just that moment of letting the drips fall from your brush to put it on, before you put it on the canvas, gives you a moment of serious thought of how you're going to apply it.
When did you come to the black tar?
I read a book, it was 2 years ago, and I was having a show at the Ottawa School of Art, and I wanted to do something different, and I was reading this book, and it was it was a book on a story of a village in England, the turn of the century, where the village itself was all steeped in spirituality. This is how they interpreted their lifestyle and their life, their associations. And it was a story of a man coming home from London who had developed analytical powers of intellect, and yet he was had part of the spirituality. And so they mentioned tar and rope as and sailing days. And I said, well, that's what I'm doing. I'm sailing through life. And, you know, this struck me, I'm going to use tar. And
I see there you have your little stove and you've been heating it on the stove.
Yeah. It's very, it loses its heat very quickly. You have to, of course, melt it. And when you put it on your canvas, the heat leaves it very quickly. So it's it can be poured on very fluid. But at the same time, when you manipulate it with a stick or a tool, it gives you resistance. And so it, it's I can control it. I'm getting so you can control it very well. And accidents can happen, and there's a lot of different textures can come from it. A lot of people are using tar now, and they almost take it on a doomsday connotation. And I don't really, I'm not using it that way. I'm using it as a pure black medium, which has an integrity of being a physical black medium. And some artists say, well, why not you just use acrylic and or oil and mediums to develop your thick black mediums. And I've looked at it, and I'm going to do paintings with the two, the tar and the medium, just to see the difference, the textural difference in the quality of the two blacks. And I know there is. And it may be very subtle, but there's a difference. And even discovering this difference between a synthetic or an oil black to a tar black, which is thoroughly black. So it's...
Are the works very heavy?
Well, the one with the marble in it, it has a lot of layering on it. And it was kind of complicated. I put it on my easel and it fell over, and I thought, well, this has become a non-easel art piece. And so I had to... it had to be secured. It's still liftable. But when it fell off the easel, I thought, well, this is... When peace comes non-easel art.
You know, John, you were born in Oshawa. Now, 1931, you mentioned to me once, and 1932, you told me another time. Can you remember which year it was?
The younger one.
1932.
Yeah.
When you were growing up in Oshawa, you studied with a very interesting woman named Dorothy Van Leeuwen.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. What was she like?
She was a great person. She really loved art. She couldn't maybe draw a straight line, but she had a great love and a great spirit because she was the only spirit in the school in Oshawa that had a enthusiasm for art. She, if a piece was done well and had something, she would really, you know, comment and praise you for it.
What did she look like?
Well, she was kind of a small woman. She was very serious. She was very serious about all this. She didn't necessarily exude any humor, but she was her dedication and seriousness just for art and music and this type of cultural background she gave to everyone. She really, because I remember getting praise from her and on a piece, and I think she most likely was very unappreciated by a lot of people, but she was the only one in Oshawa that really... as a teenagers or people that could meet, because there's a lot of artists that came, or I have a friend that went to into the art field from that class too. So,
what was
Dick Ferrier.
F-E-R-R-I-E-R?
Yeah. Yeah. He's,
is he in Ottawa too?
No, he's in Toronto. He went into the commercial field, was a commercial artist, and then he branched off and he produced a lot of landscapes and tried to do it very commercially, and I haven't heard about him lately.
Can you remember what year you had Dorothy Van Leeuwen?
It'd be around, 48, 49, 47.
What was the atmosphere like in Oshawa at the time, the art atmosphere?
it was very, Oshawa's changed. When I was there, it was only, when I was growing up as a preteen, it was only around 15,000. And when I left, I think it was 35,000. So it was a small village, a very small town. We used to go out, the gang of us used to go out and shoot groundhogs, and yet we'd be still talking philosophy and trying to discover what the hell life was about. And we used to play in the middle of the town. There was a barn that I used to play in and explore. And so it was a very small town. There was I think it maybe has lost some of that, but you felt the roots of the rural still in Oshawa when I was there. Yeah, we used to sit on the curb and watch the automobiles go by and take pride in being able to name all the models and years, and sitting and smelling the gasoline. I still think this is why, you know, all these toxic materials is we used to sit beside the gasoline station and smell the fumes of the gas, and it was so gorgeous when the old gasoline pumps, where you could see the color and the bubbles going up through the pumps.
Did you ever meet Alexander Luke?
No, I don't.
And did you have any feeling that there was any art going on in the town?
No, just outside this class of Ms. Van Leeuwen's. And I think to a certain extent, my father he worked in General Motors and used to bring wads of paper from, I don't know where he got them, but we used to always draw on this paper. And I know some artists, or it's been said by a lot of art artists that all your art has roots in your childhood. And it hasn't. It's not, it has a play in what you're doing. But
did you always want to be an artist?
No, not really. I wanted to become an architect my later years, I think. But I always drew, and I always did the murals at the either being drawing a mural in public school than being in a spelling contest. I think to a certain extent, I was thinking about this the other day, and my older brother used to read me the funnies, and as soon as he deviated from a storyboard, I'd realize, because I had the visual understanding maybe even then, and I'd get mad and beat him up. But I would always remember, you know, that's most likely, even at that age, I had to rely on my visual interpretation of things instead of his reading ability.
So after Oshawa, on to Toronto, and you went to the Ontario College of Art?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But in the design department where John Martin was.
Mm-hmm.
And who else was there? Oh, Watson.
Yeah. His daughter is still there. She's head of the art supply department. Watson Mr. Watson, anyway. At that time, I used to call him Sir, and he said, cut it out, John. But he had an English background of a kind of a mathematical background where art and design was based on a kind of a mathematical formulative breakdown, and that appealed to me. There was it can be broken down in a kind of a mathematics, same way as music or movement can be traced in through a mathematical formula of breakdown. And I think this has really had a great influence on me, and I rely on it as I use it all the time.
And John Martin?
John Martin, he was more teaching at the time I was there. He was on the commercials side of it. There was Eric Feefield, Carl Schaefer, Jack McDonald. Although I didn't really get to know him. He was in the painting end of it.
You never took his class?
No. I was there again. You go through periods. So I was just in the years, two or three years before me was all the veterans. And there was a lot of artists produced that were really great. And they were intense. They were serious. They played hard, and so that was a great years for the college. But I came in, and just at a time when the college started to accept a lot of Toronto debutantes, and it diluted the atmosphere a bit. I wanted to do well, but but I always seemed to overwork things or try too hard. But it was a great experience, to say this. Watson really gave me a lot, because all the courses were related to this design element. And in general, we took the dynamics of design, not necessarily the commercial end of design. We took what is the dynamics, what makes a design good, what makes beauty or a thing flow or communicate well. Why is that? And so it turned out where you ended up in a kind of a mathematical structure, the understructure of painting. You can paint something that's very secure, and people will look at it and feel the security in the understructure, and it'll accept it. No matter what you hang on the structure, it'll be accepted because the understructure is so secure. Or you can break that up or fragment it. So it gave me a big understanding of painting and just sculpting and that I've relied on.
Now, after Toronto.
After Toronto, I worked in the commercial field, commercial studios, and for a few years. And then I joined, those times it was $35 a week, and I was getting married. And so I decided to work for Avril as a technical illustrator. So I spent quite a few years at Avril working on the Arrow as a technical illustrator. And there again, it was in harmony with the mathematical structure of things, and also this, even the perspective of a three-dimensional aspect. You take your 100 or 200 blueprints and create a three-dimensional drawing from these 200 blueprints, and everything just had to be exact. You couldn't be a pencil thickness of a line that criticized you for being off. So there was a lot of English technical illustrators came over from England. And some of them, their drawings had a sensitivity that was just really a painting in themselves. But I used to enjoy reading the blueprints and putting it into a kind of a perspective.
So how many years there?
About 6 years there. And the crash, the Arrow stopped, and I went down to the States. And there was an election of Kennedy and Nixon. And everything stopped in California, San Diego, and Los Angeles. So I couldn't get a job. So I went back I stopped off in Detroit and got a job in a freelance studio and was working on a contract for about that summer. And then that folded up, and then I came back to Toronto and I worked at De Havilland as a technical illustrator. And from there, I worked for another about 6 years. And then from there, I was unhappy, so I was not satisfied. And so I thought, well, I'll make a real break and come to this strange city, Ottawa, and got a job as a designer in the government trade publicity, trade and commerce. And it was a lot of fun because there was a few people that were from Ottawa that were in the department, and there was about three or four from other parts, Toronto, out west, and there was lots of money all the time in the world to do things. Anything, you could have all 3 or 4 months to do a job, and you could spend any amount of money. And so it was very enjoyable. I mean, there was a lot of good comradeship. But at the same time, it was very frustrating because you do a good promotional job and on a publication, and they never give you any credit. It was always saying, okay, the next job, can you do it, you know? So it was, you're always taking the satisfaction of working out of the job. And so in the meantime, I was working on sculpture at the same time. This is my ambition, was to get into the full-time, into the fine arts.
What year was that?
It was in around 69. Or even more than that, I guess it was 60, must be around 65 I came to Ottawa. And um, so it, uh, So I left that, and then I met Janine and worked in a, and helped build up a gallery and a bookstore and a framing shop. And but we always took a few months off. We always painted, and we always sold work through our gallery. Had work in New York, everywhere. I never kept track of, because it wasn't about always a. You'd go home for a month and or a few weeks and do three or four pieces, and they'd get them in the gallery and they'd sell. So it always felt frustrating that you weren't developing. I look at my work at that time and I said, well, geez, that's interesting. That's dynamics. I want to develop that. I want to do it. And you never had the chance to really bring it forward and make it your own. So there was always a feeling we... And the business started to get to be very unenjoyable.
Because
unenjoyable. And I decided it'd be, you know, to work on our own and be more enjoyable. And sure, it has this just unenjoyable aspects to it. But it's at least you're enjoying your own part of your own fruits and your own effort. So I've always taught, since I come to Ottawa, I've always taught at the school. And I always enjoyed that. So in the last... When we sold the gallery, and for about a year or a whole winter, I just painted, and not for the sake of creating a good painting. I think I just wanted to explore the canvas, the colors. I wanted to know what was happening, because I always felt that it happened, and I wasn't really aware of it, and I wanted to become more aware of what was going on the canvas in my work. And so I took a whole winter just exploring this and painting like mad. And then I had a show at this Ottawa School of Art with this tar, and it was very well received. Mainly it's a matter of labeling, too. I always was considered a sculptor and not a painter. And now I'm considered a painter and not a sculptor. So you can't win, but there is a people label to a certain extent. I did a lot of watercolors and sold very well, and some nice watercolors. Very abstract, always abstract. And but I was somehow more associated with being a sculptor. I've done a few big commissions, big pieces of work, private commissions.
What year was the show in the Ottawa School of Art?
It was in, ask me about dates. things have happened so fast these days. But it was about 4 years ago.
That seems to be a special milestone.
Yeah. No, it was really a big change. I produced 12 pieces of work. They were 4x5. And I rented a really good studio, good space. And I did 12 in a matter of a month, 2 months and a half from scratch, from concept to... building the canvases or the boards and framing. So I really enjoyed that time. It was a really thrilling. And at the same time, I was exploring a new medium. It was the effects and different happenings in the medium itself was just thrilling. It was I just saw the potential. Where it could go and what I can do with it is just unlimited. And... So I was quite thrilled with that.
One thing is, your gallery's name was the Braham.
Braham.
B-R-A-H-M?
No, B-R-A-A-M.
A-M.
Yeah.
Braham Gallery. And it was in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, Watson's first name was Sid. Sid Watson.
Oh, yeah. Sid, that's right. Yeah, pardon me.
Well, it's a very interesting thing. You also mentioned that you knew Mr. and Mrs. Watson, Colonel Sam, and that, you know, you worked at GM. And your dad worked at GM.
Yeah, well, that put me through university or the college, and there again, I'm not afraid of work. I enjoy whatever I'm involved with, but I remember sitting down eating my lunch and looking out at a brick wall, you know, a big huge brick wall, and what can you see in a brick wall? But just even the mathematics, how one brick is on top of the others and creates a whole, the mathematical of just one unit can build a whole wall. And But it was very boring. I always felt that working there, my mind shrunk, would just be soaked in by the monotony of the assembly line.
And yet somehow, perhaps the influence on the materials, there's something there. I mean, after all, they use that paint on the cars.
Yeah.
And it's layer after layer after layer.
But, you know, I've always been physical. I enjoy physical contact and physical movement. And I don't know where this came in from my childhood days. It was a striving. I was the youngest, and therefore I always had a strive to catch up to everyone else in the crowd. And also, when you did, you weren't acclaimed or anything, too. Because, this whole stuff, we all have done that, you know. And so there was a bit of frustration at the time, the enjoyment of just striving to run as fast as my older comrades and jumping the sidewalks and climbing the barn in the trees. But I think there was, it was a meld of industrial. Like, my parents moved their house down from the country into the city. And so the country was very accessible, and the city was very new. A trip to Toronto was their memory of a trip to Toronto was a 2-day buggy ride. And of course, when they had us as a family, they had cars and everything, but they still had we can't go to Toronto. It was a 2-day buggy ride. So there was kind of a mixture of rural and urban feeling. You had this feeling that you were just from the country, just into coming into a city where the the factories and were existing and producing.
You mentioned that you actually met Colonel Sam
Bolton. Oh yeah, see, even when I was working in General Motors, during the holidays, I took usually a job for the 2 weeks or 3 weeks layoff in the summer holidays. I'd get another job in construction. And I got this job on a construction team that was doing a contract for putting in new cement in one of the factories. So we had to break up the old cement and pour in this new. And I remember Sam McLaughlin came around and looked at everything and talked to us a bit. And of course, he has a huge estate, and I used to pass it every day in Oshawa.
To school.
To school, yes, that's right. And it was always... he was a great supporter of the art, and somehow this was a feeling too. Oh, he did buy art, and he did collected art, and at the same time, so there was always the mystery of art going on in a very quiet, insignificant way. If you're aware of it, you were aware, well, geez, this wealthy man with a big, huge estate collected art. And so it did, you did feel this. I think Oshawa was a lot prettier city when I was there. They had four corners, and everything kind of radiated from that. And there was a lot of you knew everyone. There was a lot of gossip. There was a lot of, you couldn't blow your nose, but somebody would know in the town.
John, I'm going to switch the subject.
Sure.
Ottawa School of Art, Richard Gorman, whom we've known for so many years, and you know that we did the retrospective. Talk a little bit about Richard and your memories of Richard.
Richard was he had a respect in the town. I think Richard was a real dedicated person to his art, and he was well respected for it, and he was a bit the... recluse in a way. He didn't really socialize that much, but he was always felt and always seen, and his students loved him and obviously got a lot from him. But he always kind of held back of as being a loner, and he was very, very, very serious about his art. If something went wrong in his endeavors to produce or sell his piece, he would really, as if the whole world was caving in on him, and he made it known. Therefore, he was the seriousness and quiet seriousness when he was quiet, and when something was detrimental to his art, he'd really be quite explosive. So I think this combination created a dynamics. Well, this guy is really, to be admired and looked upon, and he didn't promote himself his art in as much as like some artists. So he is very quiet about this artist to other artists, but you know, I remember doing things outside the school, sculpture and installation, and he would walk by, and just you could tell the way he looked. He said, "Hey, man, you're doing well. That's great." He didn't have to say anything. He just had a look. He would come through a show, and just by passing through the room, and the way he looked and responded, he was giving you a compliment. So it wasn't. He didn't have to articulate a lot of feelings, and to get his point across, I think he had a dynamics that. This came across regardless of speaking.
And one more thing, you mentioned that he didn't show up too much.
Well, he always did, but I always came in late. And he made it up for maybe having taken the class over to the beer hall. But there wasn't, somehow I never sat in a class or really questioned the students, but because they always had this admiration for him and said, "Gee, oh, that's good." Part of his prestige, he had a prestigious air about him that the people respected, and so he did come in late and miss things or leave early. But I think he did it in a way that there wasn't a loss to any of his students.
John, this is a good interview. I'm going to stop for a minute and look at some of your work. Oh, and a little bit about what you're planning. You're going on with the environmental series.
Yeah, I like to get into the textural quality of just plain textures of the wax, tar, and the found objects, the wood and the aluminum. And there's also just the experimentation of the mediums. And they are less formal because I'm experimenting and learning from them. But I love some of the just the pure textual qualities of the material itself. And my found objects, I'm going to handle them quite differently, maybe, or starting to handle them differently. I feel that some materials blend or contrast with each other, and how I handle this is what I enjoy. I like to use marble in them. I like to use steel cable and some old wood. There's a the old wood takes on a fantastic nostalgia. I remember the essence of, if you ever sat in some of these old country railway stations, their benches, sat down there, maybe they were even abandoned. You sit down there and you can feel the people coming, and you can feel their essence because it's been planted into the wood and by very vibrations and just usage. So I like this feeling. I've incorporated some old planks that are so dynamic in their own by usage and shrinkage and warpage, and the grain has as strong an essence and presence as a functional board of wood to build something with. And so I most likely bring these two together. There's I feel it's still exploring. I feel when I stop learning, I don't know what I'll do when I stop learning. Hopefully I never will. But I like to learn, I like to explore. I like to control, but it's okay. I control this part because I've done it before. Now, with that, I can go on to other experiments or explorations of creativity, where something will give me more depth. So I'm really quite excited about the scope that I have to play in the next 20 years. And I don't see any limit to where I can go, although. There's only one thing in the back of my mind. It's like, at one point, I would like to go into figurative pieces because I love the figure and I love people so much. But that's the only other avenue where I'd maybe make a break in my work. But I think this tactile visual stimulus that you get by materials in our age is taking on a very solid presence and value. As there's so much of our life is so in a stage of illusion. You don't know what is real. Am I listening to something real? Am I reading something real? Am I looking at something real? Or is it just a big interior decoration job of influence, of promotion, of some way of life? So there's a solid feeling of, well, give us something solid, give us something that I can touch and see. I know it's tar, I know it's wax, some credibility. When I had the show last year, I was talking on the radio, and this guy who was head of the retarded educational system here in Ottawa heard the interview, and he came in and talked to me. And he had all his kids, all the schools bring in retarded children, and they touched and felt and were quite excited about the painting. And I thought that was wonderful, although touching, and I said, hey, wait a minute here. But there was something solid, something real. And so I feel that I want to explore this. No matter if you're in the art game, it's an illusion, it's a lie of maybe a truth, but at the same time, it has to be as concrete and has an integrity that takes it beyond that into a realm of appreciation and of communication of some new thing that you see. So it's because there's nothing new, but your way of handle it and the importance of what you're doing right now is new and of value. But I'm quite excited about my work and where it's going to go.
Quite right. Thank you.